Now, a lot of people will go on some kind of spring fast. Be careful with water fasts in our culture because, like I said, there's what we call liver phase one and phase two detoxification. And each of those requires different nutrients. And if you don't get enough nutrients, I talk about barrels and barges. What happens is that what you need to do with toxins is you need to get them out of wherever they are and put them in barrels so that they don't cause free radical damage, they don't cause harm in the body. And there's certain nutrients that form barrels around these toxins that you want to get out of your body. And there are other nutrients that create these little barges that come through in the bloodstream, pick up the barrels, and take it through and get it out, whether it's through urine, through your bowel movements, through perspiring, through breathing, through all of, and if it's not coming out those ways, it'll come out in skin rashes or it'll come out in mucus. I mean, those are ways that the body detoxifies. One of the things that's really nice is just 1 or 2 days a week, eat really simple. If nothing else, if you don't change anything else, 1 day a week, just be really conscious of what you eat, and I have some suggestions for things you could do on that 1 day a week. Even if you did that, it would give your system a rest, 1 day to wind down and start house cleaning. Deep breathing. Our lymphatic system is a whole other circulatory system in the body, but unlike the heart, it doesn't have a pump. But it's as full a circulatory system, and it's our house cleaning system. And it relies on deep abdominal breathing is what gets the pumps the lymphatics, and also the muscles, particularly in the calves. So even if somebody's bedridden and they can't move or they're too tired to walk, if they lie in bed and flex and point their toes, that would get the calves pumping, and do deep abdominal breathing. That's another way to get the lymphatics moving. Sometimes if somebody's in this collapsed state, that's really all they can do. For people who really have joint pain, that's what those little trampolines are for, those little tiny jumpers. You can jump on that with minimal impact to joints. It's particularly good for overweight people that have joint pain. You can actually begin to get the lymphatics going with one of those little jumpers. There are lymphatic cleansing teas. It's one of the reasons Essiac, I think, is such a powerful formula. Burdock. Cooking with burdock, eating burdock. Burdock's one of your really nice lymphatics. Castor oil packs are another thing. Over the liver or over the abdomen is a way to help the lymphatics. For a lot of us, there's chronic inflammation in the sinuses, and sometimes when that, the body's having to deal with a chronic inflammation in the sinuses, the whole inflammatory system just gets hyper-regulated. People will have inflammations in other places. Saline sinus rinse. This is what I call grandmother medicine. And it's used in Ayurveda, the neti pots. It's used in Japan quite extensively. Sea salt and clean water. And again, it's another one of those 90 days. If you do it for 3 months in a row, I've had people's immune systems change doing sinus rinse twice a day for 3 months in a row. Can really change things. And friendly bacteria, especially for anyone who's had antibiotic treatment, replace the friendly bacteria because they're a major part of our immune system and how we detoxify. One of the interesting things about bacteria is if you have the wrong bacteria in your intestines, they will take the estrogen that your body broke down at the beginning of the menstrual cycle. The liver breaks down all hormones, which is why the liver is so important in hormone regulation. They'll take the liver pulls the estrogen out of the bloodstream, barrels and barges again, it puts it into a situation where it dumps it into the colon, and it's supposed to be eliminated. And if you have the wrong bacteria in your intestines, it will take that deactivated estrogen, reactivate it, and put it back in the bloodstream. It's a very interesting process. So there's this whole gut-liver process where if we have the right bacteria in the gut, it's a major part of our immune system and detoxification and hormone rebalancing system. They're now thinking that friendly bacteria have as many functions as the liver, and that intestinal microflora should be considered another organ. And for every one cell that's our bodies, there are 9 cells of somebody else living in our guts. We are not alone in the universe. So think of your gut as a garden, and there's certain things in terms of like refined foods. eating a lot of refined foods, a lot of meat, a lot of fats, they actually kind of do in the friendly bacteria. It's sort of like the garden gets overchoked with the wrong guys because, like, your yeasts and things grow on all of that stuff. So they actually talk about bifidus being one of the friendly bacteria, a bifidogenic diet. So think of your gut as a garden and think about what you'd like to have grow in it. And part of what we eat has to do with what's going to be able to grow in the gut. And how the gut is has to do with whether our body's able to get rid of hormones that we no longer need. And so one of the things, again, that happens is somebody's liver and is not functioning properly and their gut's very toxic is you'll actually see them not getting rid of stress hormones as well as not getting rid of reproductive hormones. So here's the next one is get the most for the least, digestion, think enzymes. Rule of thumb is like minimize refined flour and refined sugar and try and have something that's fresh and live with every meal. And eat to 3/4 full. Part of where the enzymes in the body get depleted is in eating too much a lot. I think human beings were originally designed to eat a lot and then to not eat a lot, which is one of the reasons that at this point they're finding that Native American people who consistently eat a lot of refined carbohydrates get diabetes is because in that culture, people who survived did well. They were able to eat a lot and then go for long periods of time with less nutrition. And when they had consistent amounts of nutrition, it really is very hard on their blood sugar systems, but we are all seeing similar things in people of other ethnic backgrounds who have similar diets. Again, as I said, the body, in terms of minimizing robbers, if you eat refined food, your body actually has to borrow the things that were taken out of that food from some other organ system in order to digest it, because it doesn't just, you know, go in one end and out the other. It goes through the bloodstream and it goes through the small intestine, it goes into the blood, and it really gets woven into who we are and then back out again. And if it doesn't have enough of what we need, it actually scoops things up and takes them with it as it goes through. Okay, the other thing that I wanted to say about sometimes it's necessary if somebody has a big push like a deadline or something to do the DHEA or even glandular supplements. I find sometimes if somebody is in adrenal overdrive, that pre-collapse, and you give them an adrenal glandular, they'll actually get more revved up. So I like to use magnesium, vitamins B5 and B6, which feed, and vitamin C, because the adrenals use tons and tons of vitamin C. Those are things that I sometimes prefer to use than adrenal extracts, because if somebody's in adrenal overdrive, they'll use that extract, go a little further, a little longer before they crash. People use ginseng that way. At one point when I was working at the Way of Life, there was a guy who came in and he had quit drinking coffee, and he would buy like 4 jars of Korean red ginseng extract every like month. Causes high blood pressure, it can cause insomnia. The thing to look at is this last 2 lines down at the bottom. If you're always overextended, it may be necessary to re-examine boundaries, because part of where people get overextended is, oh, of course I can do that. I'll do that for you. I'm too tired to do that. Oh, but Mom, you know, it's like having a strong enough sense of who we are and that it's okay to take care of ourselves as well as everybody else, to be able to say, not now. You know, I could help you later. Or I just took a great class in long-range parenting, which is how you parent your kids so that they actually become self-sufficient. It was real interesting for me to see that I was parented with short-range parenting, which is if the kid bugs you enough, you know, you help them out. You do it for them, and it's a lot easier in the long range. So we're really talking about long-range parenting of the adrenals here. The next thing that I want to do is this dietary program to heal the digestive system, balance blood sugar, regulate weight, and rebuild the adrenals. Is this book, Mastering Successful Work. It's by a Tibetan Buddhist monk named Tartong Tulku, who's accomplished a tremendous amount. It's called Mastering Successful Work. And he uses Tibetan Buddhist practices that he calls skillful means, and it's really about bringing awareness of breath and awareness of bodily sensation and awareness of posture together mindfully to work, to do whatever it is that we're doing. The book is a little bit thick. My favorite way to work with it is actually this 28-day Mastering Successful Work workbook. And the woman that I worked with most recently and just pulled out of adrenal collapse loves this book. It's really changed how she, it's a way of learning actually how to structure time and say no, and there's a different exercise for every day of the month. And basically what he's really talking about is that part of it is that we have to kind of heal our relationship with time in order to rebuild adrenals, because part of what happens, the way we get adrenally exhausted is that we're actually, our expectations of time are unrealistic and our ways of relating to time don't serve us. When I was dealing with this for myself, my acupuncturist made me do a schedule, and I'm going to recommend this to everybody, is do a schedule and put in everything that you do during the day. And when you're rebuilding the adrenals, we're talking about rhythm. The first thing you do is you schedule in your meals, and you schedule in your exercise, and your breathing, because those are the things, and taking out the trash. It's like those are the priorities when you're rebuilding adrenals. And so your schedule that you do for yourself has those things in it. And then you schedule, you know, you put your work in there. And I know this sounds really like, who could do that? But it's moving from that's impossible to how could I change one thing? I studied with a wonderful woman named Miriam Lee. And what she said is you can get rid of a lot of symptoms with just a few treatments, symptoms. She said, but for someone to really be well, they have to learn how to use the entire universe wisely. It was kind of a real interesting thing, and it's just a way of looking at healing and treatment that I find very powerful. So this is kind of about the rhythm component. How you eat, when you eat, and what you eat are all equally important. So this little thing in the middle that I relax while eating. That's getting out of fight or flight, doing mode, and into rest and digest. One of the things that sometimes happens with adrenal problems is if the adrenals are stimulated, that part of the nervous system routes blood supply to the head and away from the digestive organs. So one of the things that people will come in when they're in adrenal overdrive in is that if they're at work, they can't eat because they're so revved up that they can't eat. And part of it is helping people to be able to wind down enough to get into rest and digest mode for lunch. Sometimes they kind of have to go for a walk. Part of what we see is people working at their computers. Absolutely the hardest thing on the digestion. I mean, people in their cubicles working on their computers, or people eating in their cars. There's nobody home down here. So if there would be one thing that I ask people to start with, to do to make a difference, is to actually just stop to eat. Chewing. The enzymes for digesting starches are in the saliva. And so if somebody wolfs their food down and doesn't chew, the whole chemical breakdown of starches doesn't even happen because it completely is reliant on the enzymes in saliva. So if any of you are having trouble digesting food, or kids who get stomach aches, is if they would somehow make a game of chewing. Tricky. These changes are not easy. I just recently treated a woman who is excruciating stomach pain, and she's really just had health problems all her life, tired of being in her body, and she said, I know you're right, but I don't want to have to do it. I do not want to chew my food. I hate eating. Family life was horrific. Don't want to do it. I do not want to do it. And I can really appreciate that, but it's like then we have to somehow or other work with that part of ourselves and just find some ways to shift the whole energy around mealtime. Mindful eating is one of the key things that can happen. The other thing in terms of this rhythm is there's a circadian rhythm called the Chinese clock, and I just threw in a few guidelines about kind of the way the energy seems to tend to go through the organs and what optimal times to eat are. Energies in the lungs from 3 to 5 in the morning, which is why yogis get up and do pranayams real early in the morning. And then the energy goes to the large intestine, and it's considered that optimally you want to have a bowel movement first thing when you get up in the morning at large intestine time, and then have breakfast sometime in the morning when the energy's in the stomach. That would be 7 to 9 in the morning. When people are in adrenal exhaustion, if you look at 3 p.m., 3 to 5 p.m. and 5 to 7 p.m., that's bladder, kidney in Chinese medicine, and that's really kind of adrenals. And what I find is that when people's adrenals are exhausted, they're often really wiped out at that time of day. And to rebuild the adrenals, if you can rest or get someone to rest at that time of day, that's one of the quickest ways to actually rebuild. And I have a client who has lupus. And one of the things that happens when she gets fatigued is that she gets this burning behind her eyes. And we're doing herbs that clear that. And what she finds is that when she does the herbs, she's fine if she doesn't overdo it at this time. And when she overdoes, it kicks in, the burning behind the eyes, 3 to 5 in the afternoon. It's just kind of, it's like clockwork. So she has enough energy to sustain herself through that. And for her to really, to get her back out of lupus, get it back in remission, part of the strategy for that is to actually not have her overextend at that time. Both Western physiology and Chinese understanding is that the liver cleans the blood. Blood circulates through the liver. Toxins are removed. And the Chinese feel that it does it between 1 and 3 in the morning. And that the deeper sleep you're in before midnight, the more relaxed you are and the better chance the liver has to detoxify. And because the liver also deals with fats and has digestive aspects to it, if you eat late, you'll often find that the liver's doing digestive things and people don't detox as well. And sometimes what you'll find is if people eat too late, and they have these liver issues, is that they'll have disturbing dreams and they'll wake up totally groggy in the morning. They'll actually almost feel hungover. And the way we sort of understand that is that the liver wasn't as much able to clean the blood to detoxify. So it's tricky, but finding ways to eat early enough is another way to really support the liver. There's a lot of discussion about food combining, and for some people it's important to not combine food in complex ways, and for other people, it's really important not to worry about it and be rigid. I worked with a woman who had breast cancer, and I met her after she had kind of licked the breast cancer, but she said one of the best things I suggested to her was this sort of way of eating kind of all of these foods at the same time, and she said it was like the next step in my healing was to unrigidify my diet and to open things up. And so there was a period of time where she needed to do the food combining thing, and then there was a period of time where she said, I really needed not to do that anymore. So in Chinese medicine, we use a lot of stews and a lot of soups, and one of the, there's an old Ayurvedic expression, which is that any disagreements these foods have are going to be fought out in the pot, and by the time you get to them, they will have worked it all out. If you can have a snack that has some kind of protein and complex carbohydrate, from 3 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, it often will head somebody off from like getting into the grocery store and eating the bag of chips while you're shopping, or you know, really doing insane things at that time of day. And if you watch in offices, that's often the time when the chocolate comes out, the sugar comes out, and it's because adrenals are flagging and people are doing the jack 'em up and then they'll crash sort of thing. And really what we want to do as much as possible is sort of avoid that caffeine sugar rush. That'll take it out of the adrenals faster than anything. Enzymes need trace minerals. So there are some enzymes that have to have like one molecule of copper or one molecule of zinc, and if they don't have it, that enzyme isn't going to be there to function. So one of the things with refined foods is it what it pulls out of the body are trace minerals. And then the enzyme system can't function. The three types of enzymes, metabolic enzymes, which I think are really part of what happens when somebody has chronic inflammation, and why the enzymes that you would take, they're called proteolytic enzymes or systemic enzyme therapy done between meals, replaces metabolic enzymes. Then there are the digestive enzymes. They're made in the pancreas. And when people overeat or eat a lot of refined foods or sugar, you actually deplete your pancreas's ability to make digestive enzymes. There are herbs that can rebuild that. Sometimes taking good pancreatic enzymes is really a helpful thing for people. And I will work with pancreatic enzymes and also then work with rebuilding the pancreas's ability to make its own enzymes. Then there are enzymes that are in food. That's the third category of enzymes. And there are lots of foods in traditional cultures. And this book, Nourishing Traditions by Sally Fallon, she uses Weston Price's research and goes back into the traditional cultures. Did you know ketchup was a fermented food product? Condiments. A lot of condiments are used because they were used to enhance digestion. Right now, what we have is dead ketchup. It's been pasteurized, but it was a fermented tomato paste, and it was fermented because in the fermenting process, like with your live sauerkrauts, your live misos, yogurt, kefir, anything but unpasteurized, anything with those live cultures, there were live bacteria and there were enzymes that were in them. And that's a part of our food processing technology that we're missing. And it's interesting, in Chinese medicine, they cook everything, partly because all their vegetables are grown with night soil. I mean, nothing is wasted in China, so all human excrement ends up back in the garden. So you have to cook all food in China. And they feel that a lot of digestive energy is totally used up by having to break down the cellulose walls of vegetables. So they'll cook things, but then they'll put in sprouts at the end of a meal, and they'll use their fermented black bean pastes, and they'll use their pickles. So part of what we understand as Chinese cuisine is that we've forgotten to incorporate the fermented part of it. Even your misos, if the miso's not in a refrigerator and it doesn't say it's live, if it's on the shelf, it's pasteurized miso. But all of those misos were done. And the other thing that's so interesting about these fermented things is they were fermented with the bacteria that was in the soil and in the air. And people, by what they ate with these ferments that were done locally, were linked with the soil and the air and the plants that were grown. And part of what's so strange in our culture is that we're completely disconnected from our microbial environment. And also modern agricultural practices. When you go in and till the soil, you actually kill all the microbes. Just as, you know, in every inch of our gut, there's like millions of little microbes working for us. In every inch of soil, there are billions of microbes, except in factory farming. All of those are destroyed. It's kind of amazing. So what we're trying to do in some of this dietary stuff is we're trying to relink ourselves to soil and to earth and to enzymes and to bacteria, that we're symbiotic beings. We're meant to, like all of these things, we're all meant to work together, even just to digest our food and to keep our immune systems running. The person who did the most research on enzymes was a man named Dr. Edward Howell, and he had this enzyme nutrition axiom. The length of life is inversely proportional to the rate of exhaustion of the enzyme potential of an organism. That's on the back page. Taken out of negative, it's like the faster you use up the enzymes, the faster you age, is essentially what that says. So what you want to do is spare enzymes. You want to eat foods that have as many food enzymes in them as you can. It's another reason not to overeat. The more you overeat, the more you overdry your enzyme capacity in the body. So, and the other thing is what my teacher always talked about, refrigerator diseases. And one aspect of refrigerator diseases is that the digestion is a digestive fire. And the Chinese say that your body actually wants about 100-degree soup to digest food. So if you eat food right out of the refrigerator, because we're mammals, you have to warm it up. So a lot of your life energy goes to warming it up. And then you have to break it down. So think how you want to use your digestive fire. And the other thing is, if something sat in your refrigerator for longer than 3 days, all of the enzymes that were in it are denatured. They're gone. Minerals don't degrade. You can take vegetables and you can boil them in bone broths, and you can make broths and you can freeze them, and they'll have minerals. They'll have all these cofactors that enzymes need in broths. And you can freeze them, you can keep them in your refrigerator. And then you have to combine them with the live enzymes to get both. There's never been a culture where one person cooked for themselves alone. It's never been done. There were the old aunties and the grandmothers stayed home, and they kept the home fires burning, and they cooked food. This is like a radical experiment that we're having a really hard time with. And you know what I think is, get together with your friends and do cooking clubs. I'll make the soup for Tuesday. You make the soup for Thursday. We can have it for 2 days. It'll be still good for 2 days, and then you kick in and you do your part and we share. Detox. I study with a Taoist dietary therapist named Nam Singh, really interesting man. I'm in my second year of studying with him. This is a formula that was traditionally used at changes of seasons. It was used at solstices and equinoxes. And it's made with fresh and dried bok choy. Now, bok choy is in the cabbage family, and remember what I was saying about cabbage family plants having these sulfur compounds that the body uses to detoxify? This is a detoxification formula because the dried bok choy, you get a lot more of those compounds than you would get necessarily. It's just a way of consolidating. It's kind of an extract. Of course, in Chinese medicine, some people run hotter and need to use more cooling foods, and other people tend to run cold and would want to avoid cooling foods. When doing a detoxifying formula, and also when rebuilding the adrenals, is go easy on onions and garlic because they're adrenal stimulants. They have really good functions, but traditionally in Taoist practices, you would not do onions or garlic when you do a soup like this. And initially when Nam said that, it's kind of like fought that. It's like, I hate telling people to avoid too many things. And then did some more research, and those kind of spicier things are adrenal stimulants. And right now, if your adrenals are like already overstimulated, they just may not need that much stimulation. There's some Chinese herbs that can be incorporated. There's a whole way I have of making bone broth that I freeze, but if you don't have time to do that, just go down to one of the markets, get them to give you a couple of big beef bones, slice them up, and just toss them in the pot. There are incredible essential fatty acids in bone marrow, and the Chinese always said marrow is compassionate to the human body. And when we're looking at adrenal exhaustion, we're looking at depletion of what the Chinese call jing, which is like the deepest level of reserves. And if you want to rebuild jing, marrow is actually a way to replace jing. Then the last one is what I call a dookie bean therapy. They're used a lot in macrobiotic cooking. And some people have trouble digesting beans, and I've sort of explained a little bit about if you have a lot of gas with beans, either you're eating too many because they're a protein and they're really kind of, they're complex to digest. So like a whole bowl of chili beans is like too much for anybody. They're never, you know, they're really not designed to be eaten that way. They're often improperly prepared. Every seed and every nut and every bean in its coating has what are called enzyme inhibitors. They're designed to keep factors in the environment from destroying the seed. And they're broken down by water, so when the seed gets ready to sprout and it's wet enough and all the conditions are right, those enzyme inhibitors are deactivated by water. And if you don't soak your grains and your beans and your nuts before you eat them, you're actually eating the enzyme inhibitors, which are going to inhibit your own enzymes. And that's the reason to soak and pour off the soaking water when eating any of these beans, is you want to get rid of enzyme inhibitors. So that's the reason that I talk about soaking beans. One of the things the Chinese always talked about is that if you eat beans and fart, that's actually a good thing. Because they talk about clearing wind out of the body. They regard strokes as being caused by wind. There's all kinds of wind problems. One of the things we now know is that if beans are properly prepared and you eat them and you don't eat too many of them and you still get gas, it's because there are compounds in the beans that are killing unfriendly bacteria in the intestines, and it's the die-off of those bad bacteria that are creating the flatulence. So that's part of the reason that beans often work for people. Now, I know there's some people can't digest them, but if you can, this is a really good way to work with beans. And the spices that are used in traditional cultures for beans, like cumin, coriander, sage, oregano, they're all carminatives, and they make the protein in the beans easier to digest and also eliminate gas. And then there's a couple of different recipes. One of the things I find that travels the best is polenta with collards and carrots and beans, and it's a one-dish thing, and you can take it to work with you, warm it up really easily, and it's got everything you need. So anyway, those are all the things that I wanted to share, and thank you all for coming. Yeah.